Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up in just a bit, we'll take you to Quantico, Maryland, to visit the Eastern Shore's only shelter dedicated to homeless and disabled veterans. We'll check in with a homeless vet we met a few weeks ago in a tent in the woods. We'll hear about his road to recovery and how the shelter is helping other vets like him here on the shore. But first, the city of Salisbury continues to make strides in its fight against crime, as new statistical data show that the city has brought its crime level down to the lowest level in a decade. Salisbury Mayor Jim Ireton has made the fight against crime and gang violence one of the main objectives of his administration. He talked with me this week in his office about what's been working and what still needs to be done.
When it comes down to it, you take a look at 2,091 some odd part one crimes in the city, and then you take a look in 2013, and then you take a look back over the last 10 years, and you find years that have 3,100, 3,200. When you start bringing them down by 35%, 40%, in a place that's getting larger and larger each year, and we've talked about this before, the idea that the population's going up and the crime rate's going down, statistically not happening in a lot of places, that's a good thing. We're going to focus on three distinct areas coming up that we think can drop the numbers even more. But again, our goal was under 2,000 part ones for 2014.
Yeah. Another notable number is no homicides for the first time in many years. Although there were a couple kind of out of the city limits, very close to the city line. Tell me how the collaboration between the Safe Streets Initiative, the police department, and you know, really the community at large have come together to make that happen.
Well, first off, let me say I just want your listeners to know I'm not trying to attempt to be fraudulent. My partner in life goes, this is fraudulent. Those things happened in Salisbury. They're your responsibility. But yes, the three murders that happened this year were just outside the city limits, but they were inside our Safe Street zone. Everyone involved. And the way that each of those three murders were approached are indicative of the pronged approach we're doing with the state's attorney's office, with the sheriff, with the state police, and the city police. And that's why those they're just outside the limits, and all three are basically domestic related.
Tell me a little bit about what the police are dealing with out there. You know, there are still crimes that are happening, as you mentioned, far fewer. In the part one crimes, so to speak, the violent crimes, as they're well known. Tell me what some of the strategies the police department are using and the results that they're seeing because of this.
I think that what the chief of police would call this is a complete change in culture in the police department. As you go from the Safe Streets model in terms of violent offenders and going after them and making sure that the people who are coming back out who are on parole do not end up being a recidivist number, those sorts of things. As those numbers go down, you're able to transfer more to a community police. And knocking on doors, is everything locked? Are your outbuildings locked? Is your car locked? You know, knock and talks that we've done at neighborhoods throughout the whole city. The other issue, of course, coming up, is the High Point model that the chief has overlaid over Doverdale and Church Street, saying to young people, we're going to bring you in and say, this is your last chance before the book gets heavily thrown at you. And your pastor is sitting here, your mom's sitting here, your grandmother's sitting here, the police are sitting here, the judge is sitting here, all these people. The NAACP is sitting here, Latino groups are sitting here, everybody's sitting here going, we want to help you, the school system wants to help you, but if this is it, after this time. That's the change from just chasing calls. We know that the number of the calls for service went up. We want the number of calls. And as the population goes up, the number of calls for service are. We know that people, the trust level has gone up in our neighborhoods. We know that there is a network inside our neighborhoods that are helping our police officers make the arrests that they need to make. And that's because we're out there speaking to neighbors, we're out there creating those relationships. So whereas I think before we were chasing a siren, we were chasing a 911 call, which we will always do and we will always do well, I think as those numbers come down, you're able to do more proactive things. And I think that's really the change in culture that the chief's talking about.
It sounds almost like you're trying to work smarter instead of just harder. Do you think that you're actually using the size of Salisbury to your advantage, going back to those things that you were saying, all the faith-based organizations, the many different prongs in this approach with law enforcement and the state's attorney office and those faith-based organizations, and even just the communities themselves kind of policing themselves a little bit. Do you think that the size of Salisbury and this approach has actually helped bring these numbers down?
I think there's two things going on here. One, if you live in a neighborhood where there isn't any crime in Salisbury, you live in a neighborhood where there isn't any crime in Salisbury. If you don't live in one of those neighborhoods, you are going to have more. The violent crime that has affected some of our neighborhoods has slowly dissipated. The things that haven't would be, like, say, in my neighborhood, automobile thefts from automobile. Okay, a back door open, a shed open, those sorts of things. But I would say that even though we have grown, we are still very much a close-knit population. So there is this sense that when something happens, regardless of where it is on the scale of bad, it's Salisbury. You can pretty much trace a lot of stuff that you see to things that have happened somewhere else, to faces that have happened somewhere else, to incidents that have happened somewhere else, to markings that have happened someplace else, and be able to quickly. We're bringing in people much faster than we used to because criminals aren't smart. Do you know what I mean? If criminals are smart, they're not getting caught, but criminals are getting caught. So it doesn't take a whole lot here to sometimes to play the whole Connect Four game and come out a winner.
Let's talk about perception in the public's view about the issue of crime. Right. Years ago, when the crime rate was at its highest, you know, there was a lot of fear in this town. As the numbers have improved, has that perception of how crime is in Salisbury improved at the same rate?
No, I don't think so. I think that those people who have one-on-one interaction with community policing strategies, with elected officials, with their neighborhoods, yes, I think those people feel safer. But, you know, this is a regional hub. Our newscasts are all of the violence from the Eastern Shore of Virginia all the way to the C&D Canal, almost to Wilmington, all the way up the shore. That sort of coverage is not going to let up. So that's not going to allow our psyches to sort of recover. If you are plugged in and you are plugged into downtown, you're plugged into the neighborhood associations, you're plugged into to the business community, you know that these things are happening. General person out there isn't going to be able to sit through any newscast, whether it be print, whether it be television, whether it be radio, and not have to listen to the first 3 minutes be death and destruction. And that's not our fault, but it is still what we, you know, everything that goes bump in the night, you know, is a terrorist, you know, is a robber. And we're always going to have to beat back those ingrained impressions that have been given to the populace by the media.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are causing crimes to happen. You know, it's been well documented that the economy is still struggling. Sometimes when people feel desperation because they can't pay their bills or they don't have a job, sometimes crimes are the effect of that cause. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about jobs and let's talk about the economy here. Do you feel that you guys are turning a corner and as many other neighborhoods and cities on the shore are slowly getting back to where they were before the economic crash in 2008?
We're always going to be behind everywhere else because we don't live on the I-95 corridor. Maryland is booming because the I-95 corridor is booming. It's not necessarily the case everywhere else. Everywhere else is going to be slower to rebound. We were slower to build the bubble up, and then we were later on the bubble bursting, and we're going to be later recovering from it. You know, municipalities are about sidewalks and water and sewer and street sweepers and streetlights. In terms of jobs, all we can do is try and make sure that, A, our bureaucracy is not getting in the way of progress. B, we're working with the economic development people at the county level. You know, we're always going to face here the idea of entry-level retail jobs and what they lead to, whether or not it's a career or not. But I think that the only thing that we can use as a guide is accessible base. And that has slowly started to turn the corner and come back around a little bit. But I caution that if we're going to judge everything that we do on the accessible base of properties based on are they selling and are we buying new ones, then we're just ready to make the same mistake that we made in the bubble before. We've got to have really good plans in place as we finish this build out of Salisbury, as we finish the infill construction, to look for opportunities to bring people who create jobs here. But in the end, I think Salisbury will always be based on government, the hospital, the university, and the education system. You know, we explain to the people on the other side of the bridge, we explain to our legislators that all well and good that that's happening on the other side of the bridge, but we need to make sure that Maryland, you know, is all rebounding at the same time. So, yes, we are worried about jobs because we know jobs, the lack of jobs is linked to crime. As a municipality, I'm not exactly sure how much effect I have on that. I can always be there at the table with our economic development specialists at Salisbury Wicomico Economic Development to try and put all the best steps forward we can for our city and the region.
That was Jim Ireton, the mayor of Salisbury. We turn now to the man who's putting many of Salisbury's criminals behind bars. Matt Massarello is the state's attorney in Wicomico County, and he says he is seeing a definite link between crime in Salisbury and heroin and other opioids. But Massarello says one thing that is improving is a problem he faced at the beginning of his tenure, witness intimidation. He says more witnesses are coming forward with information leading to arrests, and more are taking the stand, which leads to more prosecutions. And that is playing a big part in the fight against crime.
I think prosecutors are always going to struggle with that. Mainly, it's just the victimology. It's sort of the pattern that victims fall into, especially our domestic violence victims. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can enhance our ability to keep victims on board. The first thing that we do is we have two great victim witness coordinators here that if we see a crime, using technology, if I see something that comes across the watch commander briefing that says someone's been assaulted, like a female's been assaulted or a male's been assaulted, or there's been an event, we have victim witness reach out the next day. So we're building that relationship with the witness from day one, our prosecutor's office. It used to be where, as we got closer to trial, you get a call from the state attorney's office. Now we try to make that connection early. Also, if there are intimidation issues, we are vigorously addressing and prosecuting, threatening to prosecute for witness intimidation. Also, we have grant funds to do a lot of victim relocation. Some of our biggest cases, I recently prosecuted a homicide personally in November. There were victim protection issues in that case, and the witnesses came forward and did the right thing. But we, again, using our grant money, we were able to facilitate their safe, their well-being. In other communities using our victim relocation funds. I'm very much committed to getting people to be confident that they come forward and talk. And the environment now, compared to when we first spoke, it's like night and day. Mm-hmm. People do see the good, positive things that we're doing in the communities. Chief Duncan's officers are oftentimes getting out of the cars, walking the streets, building the rapport. And MSP Homicide, WBI, these guys are building and gals are building relationships with the victims. And we're not it's a relationship building. Sure. And we're not leaving them hanging. And they're seeing that when we go after somebody, we're getting the job done. We're not pleading them out. If it's a serious crime and we need to dig in, We're taking them to trial and they're getting good sentences from their judge. So that takes their fear away, too. When they see someone has a high bond, you know, they've committed a very violent act, they have a high bond, and then we get the job done, get them convicted and get them a good sentence. That creates a major sense of relief on behalf of the victims and in the communities. A lot of tips are coming in from the public because they're like the 12th man. We need tips. We need help from law enforcement or from the community. This is their community. They have a stake to clean it up. And it used to be where they used to just tolerate the drug dealer on the corner or the drug dealer in a certain house or the guy that they know were stealing bikes or cars or whatnot. Now they're saying, not in my neighborhood. And they're calling Chief Duncan's folks and they're calling Mike Lewis's and Chief Phillips's and officers. And we're getting the job done in the courtroom.
As I look around your office here, too, I see lists of, you know, most wanted and top prosecution and things like that. You know, one of the main statistics in these crime reports over the past two or three years is the number of top 25 criminals that you're taking off the streets. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's a direct correlation with taking these violent offenders, the top 25 criminals off the streets, with the fact that now you have witnesses that are working with you and feeling confident enough to, you know, move forward with prosecution?
There has to be, Brian, because those individuals that get in the top 25 list, they're self-selecting. It's because of their repeat violent nature. If you look at their rap sheet, which is the NCIC rap sheet that all of our ladies run for our offenders, we look back and they can't not be. It would be illogical for them not to be committing crimes if they're on the street because that's all they're doing. Month after month, year after year, that's what they do. And so in my office, we have about 5,000 cases roughly that we prosecute a year. one of my main jobs is to prioritize and figure out where do we put our resources? Where do we dig in? And we're catching these problems with cases early enough so that we can react and make the case as strong as we can for our top offenders. They know there's no escaping. I mean, we've had attorneys call us, defense attorneys call us and say, they know there's no way out. It's they're in the blender and they're eventually going to hit those blades. And they should. Because, I mean, these are the people that are causing the major havoc on the street and causing Salisbury to have the reputation that it had.
Let's talk a little bit about the work that still needs to be done. Many people believe that there's still the crimes that are happening out there right now are related to drugs and gangs. What types of cases are you dealing with the most?
When I first coming into office, I think the gangs were running wild. Nontray, TTP. There were 13 homicides in 2010. Dramatically, I mean, this is the first year in 10 years Salisbury had zero homicides. But we're not seeing as much as the gang issue. It's not as overt as it was. Mm-hmm. We are seeing a lot of thefts and burglaries, and it definitely has a connection to opioids. So your Oxycontin and your heroin, and people fluctuate between the two drugs. A lot of these folks also, you know, they started out with prescription pills and then heroin because it's cheaper. It's about $20 for 0.2 grams. They're getting that. That's their drug. And in order to get their fix, they're trying to find things that they can easily convert into cash. So Xboxes, PlayStations, video games, you know, a quick break in the door. And a lot of what they do is there's a pattern. They go after friends first, family, friends, and then complete strangers. And so that's what we're still seeing a lot of. Also, your air conditioner thefts, your copper thefts. That is to me egregious, because especially now with the weather getting where it is, the cold getting to where it is. But at the root cause is opioids. They're addicted, and locking them up is not going to solve the problem. So we're working with the drug court. We have a drug court program. It's a good program for those that are ready, willing to go ahead and try to work on their addiction. And drug court is not it's not a free ride. They have heavy sentences hanging over their heads, sometimes 10, 12, 20 years hanging over their heads. So they have a lot to lose if they don't stay on the straight and narrow. They come to court weekly, sometimes biweekly, to check in with the court and the prosecutor. Our prosecutor is very much involved to make sure these folks, because we want to try to shut that addiction off. Get them the help, work with the health department to get them in the methadone program. Because again, if they are getting treatment, if they're treating this, in a way that we start looking at this as like a medical condition, mm-hmm. That is better than just putting them away and they just pop right out with the same addiction. They've got the same habits, same friends. They're doing the same thing and then they're smashing doors. We're not getting anywhere. So we have to start being creative and start employing different strategies to combat that problem. But lion's share, I would say the number one crime, the number one reason we have the crime that we have is oxycodone and heroin.
Matt Massarello is the state's attorney here in Wicomico County. Matt, always good to talk to you, and thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity.
To learn more, click to our website, wamucoast.org. Quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo.